What's the difference between toilet paper and wallpaper? Lawrence, do you know?
I don't know.
That's disgusting.
I
Mate, you're gonna sort yourself out. That is awful. Listeners. Listeners, an absolutely huge revelation on the pod. Lance Barreto, you filthy man.
I thought it was a joke where I had to leave a pause.
No, no, no. No, I see we've evolved.
That was very good.
It passed the Meadows test. Meadows found it funny, so that's always a good sign.
So you might be benefiting from the fact that I'm a little bit tired from flying today. But Nate, I'm going to give you a 10.
Yes. Let's go. I thought the moment I saw the response, I was like, this is a 10. This is an absolute 10.
Oh, so good. I can see your beaming smile. You're delighted as well.
I am. What show this is going to be?
Welcome to the Paddock Podcast, featuring stories following Formula One around the world. I'm Lawrence Barreto, F1 correspondent and presenter.
And I'm Chris Medland, F1 correspondent at Racer.
And I'm Nate Saunders from ESPN.
And Nate's won today, so thanks for everyone for listening.
I might just sit out now, just let you guys chat.
Well, this is a unique pod setup right now, because we've got Nate in the ESPN towers. Mm-hmm. We have to say roughly where that is, or do you not want people, your fans, congregating?
No, it's fine. It's in Hammersmith, and it's the building shaped like a giant Mickey Mouse. One of those facts is not true. I'll let you work out which one. It's not in Hammersmith.
But it looks like a very office-like background, actually. You've got just a grey wall, which is thrilling.
That's basically, I'm in a soundproof pod, and it's grey with see-through doors either side of me, so people can walk past and they're like, what's that attractive young man doing? But then they walk to my one, they're like, what's this old man doing? And but no, it's quite nice, actually. It's fun. It's like a little Zoom pod.
Oh, it looks cool. Name for them. No, I like that. Yeah, they're cool. I want one of those. We've got myself in London still. I fly to Baku tonight as we record this, which is why I'm going to start talking really quickly the longer the show goes on. And I'm just hurrying everyone up because I have to relocate the dog for a couple of days and then get to the airport before flying, which, as these two know, I love to leave some late pressure and drama. So we'll see how that goes. But Lawrence, at least, has no drama left because you are there in Baku and it looks spectacular.
I've made it. This is live from my hotel room. I'll be honest, I haven't even looked out the window. I was so keen for Meadows not to be late that I've dropped all my stuff, plugged my laptop in, and started having a chat to you boys. But I'll tell you what, the journey here, guys, was extraordinary. Like, we hit so many roadblocks, and then we went down the wrong way, down a one-way street. And not only that, the car we were in had, like, when a stone hits the windscreen, it had a massive splinter on it, and I was like, oh, this feels like I'm in a safe vehicle. But I've made it, guys. I've made it.
I'd love the idea that if you've got to the hotel so quick, you haven't opened your window, you're going to do this pod, you could go to the window and open it, and you're in, like, Montreal or something. I really go the wrong way.
I'm just glad that his walls are painted rather than paper. That could have been confusing for him. But, yeah, anyway, like, neither of them have really understood that. Like, Nate kind of has.
I got it.
Yeah.
I'm giggling away.
Yeah.
Call back to the joke, the 10 out of 10 joke. What a day this is, by the way. Just gonna reference that again. What a day. I'm in the Mickey Mouse shaped building in North London. I'm loving it.
One thing I really like about Nate, about your setup, is you're so well lit. Like, you've got lit on your forehead and it's shining beautifully. And smile, because obviously you're so bloody happy about your 10 that you just can't contain yourself.
Wait, Meadows needs to take someone needs to take a screen grab. I would, but I can't work out how to screen grab on my laptop. I know I'm ancient.
I will get it. Hang on. Done.
Yes.
But also, I want to flag the fact that Barreto looks like he is basically being filmed undercover. It looks like someone has put one of those really like smart, small hidden cameras in a bag somewhere in the corner of his hotel room. Because I don't know why,
but
his laptop's like webcam and the way it's just framed him, I think it might have moved inside the laptop or something, but there's like a dark side to it and it's not the highest quality. And now he's looking closely.
It has moved. I can't move. I don't know how I'm going to move it.
The best bit now is, you did it. What have you just done? It moved.
Oh, I've done something.
Yeah. Okay.
I don't look like I'm underwater now.
So British listeners will know, but I feel like you're in the middle of a panorama sting operation, Lawrence, and they're trying to absolutely do you down.
Can you imagine? I would have loved to have done that job. Like on a stakeout, undercover, just spending hours listening until you get that quote that you need.
Yeah. And then you've got a story. So, Mr. Man, what are you hearing about Formula One these days? That's a very weird question to ask me while we're eating lobster at this hotel. Heard of any illegal activities going on recently? That's what I'd be like. I would not be subtle about it.
What I love is that Barreto doesn't understand that this whole podcast series has just been one long sting. And we've actually got lots of incriminating evidence against you now. So
we did.
And each other, really, haven't we? We're all screwed if we want to play that
game. That's right. We can all go down together.
Exactly. But we have, to continue the theme of like high scoring going, three reviews this week. Right, three whole ones, of which all three are 5 stars.
Oh, thank
that,
you.
That, ladies and gentlemen, is 15 stars of review.
that's a lot of stars.
It's also an internationally themed review because two are from America, but one's from Belgium. And I'm going to start with the American ones. The first one's from Summer X Bites. And it says, in formula in best way. And it's like meant to be informal. It's like the title's clever. I can't read it very well. It says, love the pod. It's super fun to hear such professionals on the grid take a step back and have some fun in the off hours. Yes, I watch F1 on all of the sources because I'm that big a nerd. So seeing your professional side during interviews and hearing all of your hot takes and jokes on the pod is such a breath of fresh air from the usual bougie reporting of F1. Keep the fun coming. Love from Sam in the USA. Thank you, Sam in the USA. There's even a love heart in there.
Wow. That is nice.
I have to keep the fun coming. So. More emojis in reviews, please. I like those.
Yeah, same.
Second one is from Andy Lindbergh in the USA. It titles it, Brilliant Banter, Glorious Race Recaps, and Just the Right Amount of Tom Brady Content. Side note, I'm a lifelong Buccaneers fan. Irrelevant to that fact, Nate was robbed on his pirate joke. I need to thank Ashley for introducing me to this pod. It's a brilliant blend of great race breakdowns and deep insight into chefs and Ferrari's amazing strategy. By reading this review on the pod, you're required to provide 2 tickets for myself and Ashley at COTA, preferably for FP1 to the race, but I won't be picky. Thank you in advance, and I'll see you all in Austin. So, yep, Andy has worked out how to make reviews work for him. And I'm going to start having to say disclaimers that everything we say in someone's review doesn't necessarily mean it's going to happen, but good try, Andy. Quickly,
I've got chef chat. So, because you know I like talking about chefs. So, a chef that I like, not my favourite chef, a chef that I like in Baku, who cooked me a burger last year in the JW Marriott, I was excited because he'd been working on one, he said, when I left last year for me this year. And he's only got to move to Poland and is working in the Sheraton in Krakow. So I can't get my burger here in Baku. Yeah.
Oh, no. That's quite sad, actually. I could feel the pain in your voice.
No, yeah. If we could just all take a moment of silence for Barreto's lack of a personalised burger.
Right. Anyway, where are we?
So I'm sure they're going to do some sort of tribute on the grid pre-race. We'll keep you posted on that. The final one is from Kaskins. In Belgium, that just is titled Great Pod. I like this as well. This is a really good short, snappy review. It says, weekly, I wait for that jingle at the start to hit and after the show for longer versions to happily clap and whistle along. The stuff in between is all right too.
Nice.
And that's it.
I mean, 5 stars is 5 stars, guys. So.
Yeah, we'll take them. We'll take them any which way we can get them.
I have a question before we move on about Andy Lindbergh. Is he a descendant of Charles Lindbergh, who... at the age of 25, achieved instantaneous world fame by making the first non-stop flight from New York to Paris. For reference, on May 20th to 21st, I'm sure you knew that. He covered the 33.5-hour, 3,600-mile flight alone in the Spirit of St. Louis, which is a little plane. I knew who he was, but obviously I just regurgitated all of that from memory. But if Andy is a direct descendant, I will try and find him an FP1 ticket. I mean, I can't guarantee anything, but...
Well, he didn't ask for an FP1 ticket. He asked for FP1 to the race. He wanted the whole weekend.
He demanded. Yeah. I mean, if he answers that question, then we'll look into it. But that was the name that jumped out at me. So, Aviation Pod.
As cans of worms go, Nate, by offering to look into that, you have just opened a pretty big one, I think, on this podcast, but never mind.
No, I mean, look, if we get a direct descendant of any famous aviator, I think we'll try and get them FP1 tickets. That's just a general rule. So if Neil Armstrong's kids are listening to this, hit us up. If Buzz Aldrin, I don't know if Buzz Aldrin does have kids, or Grant, I assume he does. He went to the moon. He's got to have kids. I would have kids if I went to the moon. I'd have, I don't know.
What?
I'm still high off that 10 out of 10. Let's do some F1 chat before we completely lose the plot.
Yeah, I've got a good question, actually, because it's completely missed out by Barreto talking about his journey to Baku and not referencing his now esteemed status that he's more important than Daniel Ricciardo.
No, hang on. For absolute clarity, Daniel, in case you're listening, I didn't say I was more important than you. I just described the process today. So I was very lucky. I was on a charter plane from London to Baku, which meant obviously we didn't have to stop over anywhere. There's not many commercial flights. And on that plane were many F1 personnel, including many drivers. And I would say the majority, at least that I saw, turned left to business, but Daniel turned right. And he was, I reckon he was like row 20, 25 on this plane in economy, fair play to him, in economy. And I was row 8 in economy as well. So just in case, you know, I can see Nate was ready to jump in and go, oh, that was business, wasn't it? But no, I'm not, I fly in economy.
I love that idea that you went down to the toilet at one point, walked past, and he was just drinking his drink out of his shoe or something. He's like, no, the service is dreadful. It's like, no, they served it to me in my shoe. Like, Danny, you've only got yourself to blame for that, my friend.
Well, I have a lot of respect for him for flying economy.
Yeah, same. Yeah. You'd think someone like Danny Ricciardo, I wouldn't have expected ever to fly now in a regular economy.
I imagine it was probably like, I'm not trying to make it not, so I'm not trying to take away anything from him, but I imagine it was probably the offer was, you can be on this flight, it's direct, so it's easy, but the only space left is economy, or you're hopping through 6 different countries to get there across 12 hours or at 3 o'clock, like I'm doing, which is I'm going via Istanbul overnight. But of course, if you're going via somewhere overnight, that means you're stopping halfway for a 3-hour layover in the middle of the night. So, I chose like wisely. I leave at 10 p.m., just after 10 p.m., and land at 11 a.m. With a layover in the middle, which is cool. So I'd take economy, even if I was like Barreto and used to much finer things in life, I would take economy over business, like if it was a direct flight, if that makes sense. Yeah, good. Anyway. but, I mean, you say you've got a lot of respect for him, Nate. It's not what the WhatsApp chat said.
Well, I mean, I made a joke, you know, that I said, Lawrence said he's near the back, and I said, like he is in most races now, ? Then I put in brackets, I'm so sorry, Daniel, please forgive me, which I would like to clarify.
This is true.
But, like, you know, a meaner person could say that maybe Zach is already punishing him and saying, no, you sit in economy until we get more from you. I'm not saying that is what's happened. But that's what the conspiracy theorists would say, hearing Lawrence's lies about. Or that Lawrence is in line for the Ricciardo seat, is what I'm going to say. And, so Zach was like, I'm going to put you. I don't know why Zach Brown's doing your tickets, Lawrence. But he's like, I've got a spare ticket for a Lawrence Barreto. And you're like, I'll take it.
Well, I am very light. So technically, I should be a good go-kart racing driver. I'm not, but I should.
By any chance, when you walk through business, did you see Colton Herter or Pato Award? Just chilling out? No? Maybe in disguise? Maybe one had a big clown mask on or something?
No, I can neither confirm nor deny.
They're wearing a Queen's Jubilee mask. That's why.
I knew it.
Well, mate, I'm sad that you're not coming to Baku.
I know. I do like it in Baku. It's, my only memory of it, you guys will remember, I tore my ankle ligaments a week before going in 2019. and I was walking around in a big boot. And the one place in F1 that you probably don't want to be walking around the paddock in a big boot is sweaty Baku, sweaty, long paddocked Baku, where you walk into the paddock and you're still about a mile and a half away from the media center. So I was like limping around like an idiot. But I did get seats at every media session I went to. Everyone was like, do you want to sit down? I was like, I'd love to.
People are nice in Formula One. That's a real insight, Nate.
It is. Fans right now are listening and they're like, wow, I feel like I'm there with Nate in 2019.
And his boot.
That actually, there is a good Danny Rick story from that race. I remember hobbling into a Renault session to chat to him in one of his sessions. And he was like, mate, what did you do? And I said, I was stood on a football. And he like looked at me and he was like, huh. And then I think he was looking and he was like, I don't know if he's being serious. I was like, I'm being very serious. I stood on a football and it was very, and I was like, people laughed. And he was like, ah. And he was kind of like laughing about it. And he was like, I think he felt like, I don't know whether this is a laughing issue. So I was like, oh, everyone's been laughing at it. It's fine. And then the laughter started from everyone around the table.
I can see the pain in your eyes when you're telling that story.
It was sad. I was like, et tu, Daniel? Et tu?
Well, that was because for context, you stood on the football while playing football, didn't you? I wasn't there.
So I tried to do a Ronaldo-esque step over, and I kind of did step over half the ball, and I stood on it, and then the ball rolled under my leg. It was actually one of the most painful things I've ever seen and felt. But it was punctuated by, as I landed on the floor, everyone around me on the pitch laughing and then going, oh, might need to help him out. My first thought though was, I was like, I hope I don't have to miss races. Cause I hadn't been to a race for a while and I was like, I want to go back to one. So I basically just like, I effectively lied to work and said, I'm fine. I'm not in excruciating pain every time I step on the boot. And then it took ages to heal. So don't go to Baku if you've injured yourself. That's the moral of that story. Had nothing to do with me walking, it was to do with Baku, the Baku energy.
Well, if you want some top trumps, as Nate waves as someone outside his pod, that's amazing. I like that you can just do this.
Mickey Mouse just turned up. Yeah.
That was like the Queen's Jubilee, going down like the mall or something, just waving regally at people. Yeah, to play top trumps, I did very similar before a flight to Australia. On the actual day of flying, I was playing a football match, like a proper 11-a-side game, like for the club I used to play for in Somerset. And our kickoff was something like 1 o'clock and I was going to play this game, go home, shower, change, get the train up to Heathrow and fly overnight, like Saturday night. And just before half time, I was in on goal and went to shoot and somebody tried to stop me last second and I shot, landed and their tackle went straight through my planted leg, and tore my ankle ligaments. So I thought it broke my leg genuinely, like the pain and like the way it feels. Which obviously was, you know, I dealt with it very well and screamed wildly, but, I then got home and my ankle had ballooned up massively and did not look good, but I had a choice to make, which was go for an x-ray somewhere or catch the flight. So I stupidly thought that Heathrow being a big airport and dealing with a lot of people and maybe injuries might have an x-ray machine. So I got the train to Heathrow, and found it didn't, but then I was like, you know what? I'm shuffling about on it. Okay. I think I did a phone consultation as well. On the way.
This is such a meta story, isn't it? Yeah. I went to the airport expecting there'd be an x-ray machine there. You should have put yourself through security.
Leg first
and be like, can you just print this off for me, mate? If you see anything that looks out of place, just tell me, does the bone look like a knife? If the bone looks like a knife, then we're in real trouble. If something's sticking out. And he's like, sir, I can't let you through here. You're like, come on, just please let me.
Great idea. So this phone consultation said if I'm shuffling around, then it probably isn't broken, because you couldn't do any, you know, it couldn't touch the floor or something. And I was like, well, yeah, it's very painful, but no, I don't think it, maybe it's broken. So, I flew because I'd managed to do that much. And I was like, well, once I'm starting the plane, I don't have to worry, take my shoe off and, just rest it, try and elevate it where I can. And that was fine for the first flight to Dubai. And then because it had swollen up even more, and then I got up and like tried to get off the plane in Dubai and I couldn't walk. And I had to get one of those mobility buggy things that helped me and a very old man from India to like the next security thing. And the old man from India judged me. He was looking at me like, what's wrong with you? You do not need this help. But I couldn't walk. So I eventually got my x-ray about 3 days later at the circuit in Melbourne. Wow. And that's when they said, no, you've just torn all your ligaments. And, they basically strapped me up and told me, like, just crack on.
on your way.
Yeah.
Wow, that is nuts. I, you know, I remember that vaguely being in WhatsApp. Everyone was like, "Meadows is an absolute nutter. He's trying to walk around." Yeah.
Scraping around, but I got there. It was all right. It did mean it was 3 whole months so I could sort of exercise again. I think my next run actually was Baku. I think that was my first run after doing that, was the first race in Baku. So that would have been 2016, I guess. So yeah, that Boar Festival race when everyone thought it'd be crazy.
Yeah, I was going to say, and what a race it wasn't.
Yeah.
Baku 2016. I always love that story about Baku that year when the F2 race was insane, crashes everywhere. So we were like, well, this is going to be nuts. And everyone just was really polite and didn't do anything in the F1 race for the whole thing.
And people think that's just maybe the way we recall it. So I've had Marcus Ericsson on our Sirius XM show that you two were beautifully on last week. I had Marcus on this week and we mentioned that. And he was like, yeah, I remember that. All of us were just like, it will be carnage. We were watching the support races and it was complete chaos. And you got into the car on the grid, like really nervous, thinking just take it easy and stay out of trouble and I'll score points. The way he told the story, it was almost like they were scared to go racing. And then he said, and of course, so nothing happened because everybody did the same thing. So it's true. That was their approach. But it won't be like that this year, will it?
Did you call that race?
I did not call that race.
You are the voice of Baku for those who are lucky enough to be in the grandstands, aren't you?
I am indeed. 2017, I think, was my first year as the voice of Baku. And I don't know why I just called myself that. That's just for you guys. But yeah, I think
no, Meadows, listeners, Meadows went through a good 3 years being like, hi, Chris Medland, voice of Baku. Before he even had the gig, he just was saying it. He was just like, no, I'm the voice of Baku.
Speak it into existence.
Yeah.
So yeah, 17 was my first year doing that. It was good fun. That was when I was the good omen because that was a crazy race, 17, which was Daniel's win, I think. And he overtook 3 cars into turn 1 at one stage. So I had that one when it was Daniel and then Valtteri pipped Stroll to the line, which was madness. And then 18, I'm trying to remember what happened in that, but I seem to remember that also being a bit crazy. Is that when Daniel and Max crashed?
Yeah.
Yeah. And Grosjean crashed by the safety car and blamed Ericsson again in this show.
Well, I'm going to defend Grosjean here. Because he never blamed Ericsson. No. His engineer did, Gary Gannon, and everyone made the joke that, and I've spoken to Gary Gannon, he's a really nice guy, but like, Grosjean never was like, I think Ericsson hit us, it was his engineer. And his engineer wouldn't have seen what happened, and he would have just seen that Ericsson was behind him and whatever. So, I always feel like that's unfairly done on Grosjean. Although, it's funny to say, so can't believe Grosjean blamed Indy 500 winner Marcus Ericsson for hitting him.
Well, this is what Marcus said, that he really hopes that by winning the Indy 500, now the first thing people won't remember him for is Grosjean, Grosjean's team blaming him in Baku. Because he's like, obviously it became a running joke and people always bring it up. And he's like, oh, hopefully I've done something that kind of overshadows it now. I was like, yeah, don't bet on it. But yeah, 18 was good. Then 19 was boring again because I think everyone went back to the 16 approach. So I'm trying to work out the way it's gone. Does that mean we're meant to have a boring one this year?
Yeah, it's like Henry VIII's wives, isn't it? It's like divorce, beheaded, survived. It's like good, bad, bad, good. Is this divorced or beheaded or survived? Which one's it going to be?
This might be survived because I'm going with beheaded being like the killer tires last year, just taking people out of the race. And then the year before that was 2019, which is pretty boring. So yeah, okay, it's going to be good. It's going to be a race of survival.
Yes. Yeah, the divorce was F1 fans divorcing from the entertainment. It's probably not a good analogy. I tried.
Yeah.
That 10 joke seems a long time ago, doesn't it?
It does. However, it's still there for record, so it never go away, no matter how hard I try.
Well, if we think it's going to be a crazy race, who needs a good one? The guy you've been panning.
I think Daniel needs a really good race, doesn't he? Or he just needs a good race, frankly. I think if he could get into the points and just give himself some stability. I feel a bit bad for him because there's obviously been a lot of chatter about his future. As far as I know, he's got a 3-year contract. He can choose if he wants to leave at the end of the year. We're 7 races into this season? There's plenty of time for him to pull it back. He tends to start the season slower. Yeah, exactly.
He won a race, like Norris didn't do that. everyone close to Daniel says like they're like he's got a 3-year deal with Senna out.
Yeah.
So from their side, I think that they're not really that worried. But it sounds like McLaren.
He's also not a quitter, is he? I think
no.
It's just exactly. That's just not him.
Yeah, I think that I can see why Zach's making you know references to contracts and stuff. Maybe you think maybe it'll get something out of him. You know, it'll fire him up a bit. But I don't know if that's the way you fire up someone like Danny Ric. I don't know. It seems like he fires himself up. Doesn't need all that chatter around. But I don't know. That's just my take on it. But I agree with you. Baku's a good place for him to maybe have this race. He's always been really quick here. So hopefully he can refine some of that magic.
Medicine.
Yeah, I sort of agree. I mean, I think the pressure is there, is warranted because the whole reason McLaren signed him was that he was the experienced race winner. That's, you're not waiting for him to develop or something. You expect results almost straight away from him. And to have not done it for a season and a bit now, really, will be frustrating them and frustrating him. But I think also it's more, if there's going to be movement in the driver market and if Daniel's even considering something else, or if he's maybe just looking at what might open up as a fresh start, if he, for some reason, feels that that would be better for him, it's all going to have to happen pretty quickly because there's not going to be that many seats. There's not going to be any more competitive ones really for him. So I think it's probably that about now is when you would just kind of suss that out and maybe feel out any options if you've got them. Cause he wouldn't wait until the season's over or nearly the end of the year and then go, you know what? Like this isn't working. Let's go our separate ways. It would have to be mutual if that happened, but I think there's probably been, it might well have crossed his mind, but I expect him to fully stay and to sort it out actually. I just think it's going to, I think the problems he had last year, everyone hoped, and I thought maybe this year would be better. And it looked at times like it was going to be during preseason until he got COVID. And even the first race in Bahrain, he looked okay compared to Lando. But then, the way it's then clearly been a struggle still, at least now the work he's doing to try and work it out will benefit him for the rest of his F1 career, really, with this type of car. Whereas the work he did last year, trying to get used to last year's McLaren, was then scrapped over the winter. So, I think at least these kind of even just small bits of progress now will have a longer term benefit. So it's maybe a slightly better situation than it was 12 months ago, but I think he'll get it. He'll get it sorted. He's got the right attitude for it. I just don't also see where would really tempt him to go elsewhere. If he's actually thought clean break, there's no better options for him really, are there now? So you might as well try and fight it out.
I agree. I don't think he can go anywhere else.
I also feel like he's probably learned the lesson of jumping always isn't the best thing to do. Like he's moved from Red Bull to Renault to McLaren. Mm. Each time he's had to take time to learn what he's doing. And so I don't see why moving to another team, it's going to be any different. And so then it's another year or however long it's going to take him to get settled. McLaren love him. Like the people who he works with really like him. So there is no real reason to leave other than he feels like he can't succeed there. And I don't think he's there yet. I think what obviously makes it much worse for him at the moment is Lando is delivering at such a high level, but he's also doing it when he's sick.
Yeah, Lando's a beast, isn't he? I don't think any of us really anticipated this. Like, do you remember Lando last year was clearly a bit pissed off when we, at the start of the season, we were like, how are you going to raise your game to beat Daniel? How are you going to, and he was like, why do I need to raise my game? He was like, maybe Daniel has to raise his game. And it was at the time, it was seen, like Meta said, like he was being brought in as an experienced race winner. But I remember Lando, every time he was asked, was like, well, I think I'm going to beat him. And I feel like, I think everyone coming into it didn't quite expect we'd see this Lando. He's obviously established himself as one of the best drivers in F1. But I think that's probably surprised a lot of people. Maybe Daniel himself, just how good Lando is. Certainly surprised me. Like I thought maybe we'd get there eventually, but Lando's been like, aside from Monza last year, it's probably the only time when he didn't, like, when you looked at it, well, and Russia as well, two maybe opportunities where you're like, man, Lando dropped the ball there. Maybe McLaren dropped the ball as well in Sochi. Otherwise he's been really good. So, I don't know. It's not quite Hamilton Alonso, but it's in that kind of ballpark, I think, for like young guy comes in or young guy is there and makes a much more experienced guy look a bit bad.
I think Lando is next level good. I think he's up there with, Charles, Max. I think we're going to be talking about him for years and years and years and years to come. I think he was underestimated when he came in. I think people were talking about George maybe more so than Lando. I think Lando is the next big thing.
And if he is, let's say Lando goes on and dominates for a few years when McLaren get their car in the right place, it kind of puts this Ricciardo phase into a bit of context, because Ricciardo might be really driving really well for all we know. Like Lando might just be like, oh wow, he's actually just delivering absolutely superhuman results. Like Bottas at Mercedes, I think if Lewis hadn't been there, Bottas probably, in that last year, he looked pretty bad, but he was always pretty good. It was just his benchmark was always Lewis is just absolutely destroying him in the same car. And it, your main comparison is that. So that'll be interesting in a few years to see where the comparison lies, I think.
On that, on Bottas, actually, gives me a segue to say, I went to see him yesterday. I went to Switzerland.
That was unintentional, but I'll take it. Let's go.
Yeah. I flew to Switzerland for a day to do a podcast with him for Motorsport magazine, and it was really cool. He was really open and honest. He did talk about that, actually, about how tough it was and how hard he was on himself, because he was like, this is a great opportunity for me to try and win a championship and really take the fight to Lewis. And he's like, he had that belief he could. And then each year that it didn't happen, he would be like, I've got to come back harder, got to come back stronger, got to do better. And each year that didn't happen, he was like getting him down. So he talked about some of the mental struggles, and like there was some, I'm not going to do the spoilers because it's not live yet, but there was some pretty strong stuff he said and admitted to from his personal life that I was like, wow, I never knew that. That was really, really cool to kind of hear from him. So yeah, you can then see as well the impact that sort of thing can have. And he mentioned what it was like with media getting to him when people are like panning you, and he's like, I'm not doing a bad job. I'm not doing as well as the other guy, but the other guy's damn good. And like you'd be seeing me in a totally different light in a different car and a different team, or, maybe against a different driver in this team, because if I'm beating someone who's not quite as good, I'd be winning the championship and you'd think I was amazing. So, it's a good point that, but I just wanted to tell you guys, I went to Switzerland. This is my brilliant travel planning, is that I went, so I've got an overnight flight tonight, which I am going to have to run for fairly soon. And that's got an overnight, a stop. So I won't be sleeping on that. And yesterday I got up at 3:45 a.m. to fly to Switzerland to do that podcast, and was back in a day, but it was really cool. I got a very cool tour from a guy called Gary, who's worked at Sauber for about 20 years, gave me a big factory tour, showed us behind the scenes and stuff. It was excellent. It was really cool. So it was really nice. I've never been to the Alfa Romeo factory. I'm not as big time as Barreto, who gets to host Kimi's goodbye parties and things like that. So, it was really fun to do actually, and see just kind of what they've been developing a bit, but what they've got there, and the whole setup in Hinwil. So ticked that one off the list, and just thought I'd add to the lack of sleep, really. Why not?
That's like a classic Medlin trip. That is like, I can do Switzerland in a day.
So it wasn't planned initially. So the whole point is, I've just been nice about Bottas, but it's because he screwed me over in Miami, and the night before the podcast was meant to be recorded in his hotel there, said that he was too jet lagged and wanted to give it his time properly, and I think it was all a lie. I think it was basically just didn't want to get up that early to do it, but said, can we do later in the weekend, but then didn't offer another time or a better time. So they said, oh, we'll get you to come to the factory and sort of give you a tour and things. And I think originally the pitch was like, oh, and you maybe get to interview Fred and do this, do that, but in the end they picked a day when everyone was going to the race or wasn't in. So Valtteri was in doing a bit of promo stuff and had been in the sim the day before, but it had been a Swiss holiday the day before, so we couldn't do that. And then And then everyone was leaving Tuesday afternoon or had already gone to Baku. So it was his fault, but I just had to get it done because we had deadlines for the podcast. So committed to the cause.
Fair play, Medis. I look forward to listening to that. And I'm going to let you go to the airport now because I don't want you to get told off or miss your flight. And I don't want you to rush Monty as well, as in Monty, your dog.
Yeah.
I haven't referred to as Monty. Thanks very much, Chaps. It's been a pleasure. Medis, I'll see you very soon. Nate, I'll see you in Canada. Of course we'll talk before then, and thanks to everyone who's been listening and for anyone who submitted reviews as well. Please remember to follow us across our social channels at Padhoc, and we'll do this again very soon. You can read Medis' work on racer.com, Nate's work on ESPN.com, and my work on F1.com. See ya.
Bye.
Bye.